The Lima Coast to Coast, Show 25, April 26, 2006. Do what thou wilt should be the whole of the law. Welcome to Thelema Coast to Coast. My name is John Crow and I'm the host of the show. I want to welcome everybody to the one-year anniversary show of Thelema Coast to Coast. That's right. Thelema Coast to Coast has been on the air for over a year now. Actually, we celebrated the one-year anniversary on April 24th, but due to scheduling, I couldn't release a show on that date, so that's why I picked today, the 26th. So, welcome to the show, and I want to thank everybody who has really made this possible, especially the listeners and the guests. If it wasn't for everybody participating in this and giving feedback and coming on the show and talking about the Thelemic culture, there would be no Thelema Coast to Coast. So, thanks to everybody who made this possible, and I appreciate the trust that you all have put in me, and I will do my best to make sure Thelema Coast to Coast is around for another year and that it just gets better and better and better. If you want to get in touch with the show, there are a number of ways to do so. The easiest is going to the Thelema Coast to Coast website, and that's www.thelemacoasttocoast.com. On the site is a feedback form. You can fill that out and send it in. Or you can send an email to podcast@thelemacoasttocoast.com. You can also call the listener line and leave a message. That number is area code 206-600-4216. And if you want to use the old-fashioned mail, you can write to Thelema Coast to Coast, care of John Crow, C-R-O-W, P.O. Box 7045, Marietta, Georgia, M-A-R-I-E-T-T-A, Georgia, 30065, and that's in the USA. Also, I am still doing the promotions for the Thelema Coast to Coast bumper stickers. I've gone through about half of them now, so I have about 50 or 60 left. Actually, I guess I've gone through a little more than half of them. So if you want to get a Thelema Coast to Coast bumper sticker, all you have to do is send a postcard to the address that I just gave a little bit ago. And the postcards that you send will be scanned in and put on the Thelema Coast to Coast website. You can go on the site right now and see dozens that I've received. And in return, I will send you a bumper sticker. Can't get any easier than that. So send something out. Also, because I released Show 23 and Show 24, Parts 1 through 3, so close together, some of you who get the show via the RSS feed may not have gotten the last few shows. I'm noticing some disparity in the downloads, and I just want to make people aware that they can either go through the RSS feeds and go back to the previous shows, or you can go directly to the website. In particular, I really want to highlight Show 23. I think it's one of the best that I've ever done, and I talk about a lot of really good information on there, and as well as having a number of good interviews. So if you haven't listened to Show 23, I strongly, strongly recommend that you go back to do it. Okay, on today's show, I'm going to have an interview with Keith418. We're going to be talking about Liber E, Crowley's text, and also have an interview with Eddie Menzenmeyer. He is the owner and operator of Latex Records, the company who's been giving a whole bunch of CDs to the podcast to give away, and the music that I've been playing. I'm going to be having a bunch of feedback and also talk about a few other things that are on my mind. So first, let's get into the feedback. I've received a pretty decent amount, so thanks to everybody who has emailed and also received a number of voicemail messages. So what I'm going to do is intermix the emails that I'm reading with the voicemails that I've received. The first email is from a James. He says, "Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Hi, greetings from England. Just been listening to Podcast 23. I want to say well done and thanks. You're doing a great job. I know there are plenty of other Thelemites out there who, like me, are not members of the OTO or any other magical order. I would like to contact like-minded people in north of England, maybe arrange a get-together or whatever. I could be contacted via Frapper. Love the law, love under will. James." So if there are any listeners in the north part of England who would like to get together with James and just a bunch of other Thelemites, give me a holler and I will give you James's email address and you all can get together up in the north of England. So thanks for emailing, James, and I hope some people contact you. Here is the first of our voicemails.
93, Mr. Crow, Stephen in Massachusetts, and I am calling you to thank you for all the hard work that you've done over the last year. I know that you have really poured a lot of work into this, and I especially want to thank you for the past three episodes you did on the writing of the Book of the Law. I have not stopped listening to them constantly in my car that is playing over and over and over. And I just felt that I needed to take a moment out of my day to thank you for all the hard work you've done. So I hope to hear the podcast that is coming up in a few days. And thank you, and 93.
Stephen, you're very welcome. Thanks for the feedback, and I'm glad you like the 3 days podcasts. I was really pleased with them myself. The next email is from Mitch up in Canada. He won a CD, and he also sent in for a Thelema Coast to Coast sticker. 93, John, just wanted to acknowledge the reception of the CD you sent me for winning the podcast draw. I also got the Thelema Coast to Coast sticker a few weeks ago for sending in the postcard. I was very impressed by the letter accompanying the sticker and the card with a quote from Lieber All that came with the CD. Like the quality of the podcast, this attention to detail denotes your dedication to this project. Again, thank you for taking the time to make a difference promoting Thelema, setting a high benchmark for Thelemites everywhere. In light, Mitch, 93. Well, Mitch, thank you very much for the feedback. I'm glad that you got everything. I hope you're enjoying the CD. And I also want to thank you, since you were the one who helped me get a copy of the first day of the Book of the Law recording. So many thanks to you, too. I'm glad you liked the show, and thanks for your support. Now I'll play the second voicemail.
This is Johnson from Virginia. Happy birthday, Thelema Coast to Coast. I can't wait for the terrible twos.
Thank you very much, Johnson. Thanks for the birthday wishes. I appreciate the voicemail. The next email is from Evan. And he says, "John, do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Just a note to thank you for the presentation of the three chapters, particularly the rendition of the third chapter, which I had not previously heard. Along the same lines, and perhaps of interest to you and your listeners, Robbie Robb et al. Recorded a rendition of Akka Dua Mantra on Quiet Table, 1999, the second release from Three Fish. It is track number 12 in that release, titled Chantreus. Blessings and worship to the prophet of the lovely star. Thanks again. Love is the law, love under will." Well, thank you for that information, Evan. I have not heard that, or in fact, when I was speaking with Khalil Khan, he did not tell me about that. So thanks for the mention of it, and I appreciate the feedback. And I, too, particularly love the third chapter rendition that was done. Okay, here is the next voicemail.
"Do what thou wilt should be the whole of the law. Hey, John, this is Father Nove Res. Just wanted to say that I've been listening to your show since the first episode came on a year ago, and I wanted to say that you're doing a fantastic job and to keep it up. Love is the law, love under will."
Thanks for the support, Nove Res. I appreciate the voicemail and you listening for so long. The next email came from Chris on MySpace. For those who don't know, Thelema Coast to Coast has a MySpace page. It is www.myspace.com/ThelemaCoastToCoast. Very easy to get to. There are already almost 300 people friended on it. So if you have a MySpace page and want to hook up, I do put the notices about when the new podcasts come out on the MySpace page. So you can subscribe to the blog there and get a notice about when the new shows are available. But Chris sent a message saying, "Absolutely enjoyed the April 10th podcast. The reading and music was incredible and perfect listening for my Friday afternoon. I've been listening to the last few weeks. I think I've heard about 4 different podcasts and am most impressed. Keep up the good work. Thanks for the email, Chris. I really appreciate it. And encourage you to go back and take a listen to all 24 shows. Actually, I guess there's more than that if you consider all the parts and the outtakes and things like that. But 24 numbered shows. So I hope you go back and take a listen to all those and enjoy them. So now let's get into the next voicemail.
Hi, John. We really appreciate the Lima Coast to Coast and hope to hear more. 93.
Thank you very much for the feedback and the voicemail. You're very welcome, and I'll keep doing as many podcasts as I can. All right. The next email is from Eric in Panama. He has emailed before. He says, 93 John, my name is Eric from Panama, Central America. I just wanted to congratulate you on the first anniversary of your podcast and also give you a heartfelt thank you for the great work you accomplished by making it. I consider myself an aspiring Thelemite, still working on my true will. I really value the healthy criticisms you and Keith418 discuss, and also your comments on the great potential of the OTO. As a Mason, I can vouch in favor of dues because of their benefits to the organization far outweigh any perceived problems, and do hope one day to join and participate fully in the OTO, to grow within it, and to help it grow too, especially helping it to manifest in Malkuth, the Blue Equinox model. Also, after listening to the comments regarding the search of a teacher, could you please do a podcast focused on the AA, history, mechanics, actual state, etc.? Please keep it up, and let's hope for many more anniversaries to celebrate with your show. 93. Well, thank you very much, Eric. I appreciate that. Appreciate the feedback and the well wishes. As for the AA, that is a great suggestion, and actually one that I've already looked into a little. I've tried to get a few people from the AA that I know in the higher structures of the AA on the podcast, and unfortunately those requests have been declined. So if there is anybody in the AA, and I'm looking for more of the higher level administrative levels and the higher degrees, I actually do know quite a few people at the student and neophyte and zealotry levels, but I'm looking for a little higher than that. If anybody from the AA is interested in being on the show and talking about the AA structure, and so forth, I would be more than happy to have them on the show. If you're listening, send me an email, and we'll make arrangements. So, but Eric, thanks again for your feedback. And now we'll move on to the next voicemail.
Hi, John. Do it thou wilt shall be the whole of the law. Rick Perlstein here, with New Aeon Camp, OTO in Tampa. First off, thank you so much for all the work you've done in producing and hosting Salima Coast to Coast. I know how much work it takes to put together a quality show, and man, you are providing a great service to the Salima community, and I know of a whole lot of folks like myself who can't wait until each new episode is released, so again, thanks for that. Second, major kudos for the Holy Days episodes, brother. Not only to you, though, John, but also to all the folks who performed and produced and otherwise had anything to do with the creation of these recordings. At our celebration here at New Aeon, we played the episode during our feasting, and all of us were just flat-out impressed with the quality of all of it. So, lastly, thanks for the nice things you said about us on episode 22. We love visitors here, as you know, John, and if any listeners are planning to visit the Tampa area, please contact us. You can reach us through the website. Anyway, thanks again, John, for all you do, man. I can't wait to see you here soon. Love is the law. Love under will.
Thanks for the feedback, Rick, and thanks for the invite. I don't know when I'll be getting down to Tampa next, but maybe it'll be sometime this summer, and I'll get to enjoy the nice weather down there on the beach. Anybody else going to Tampa, make sure that you email New Aeon Camp and try and hook up with a group down there. They're really a good bunch of people. The next email is from someone who goes by the name Isle93. It says, 93, the name Thelema Coast to Coast. Well, wouldn't it be more correct to call it Thelema Worldwide? I think this project could evolve way beyond the U.S. coast. You already have listeners around the globe. Maybe in the future, there could be a Thelemic Podcast Society worldwide, a global Thelemic podcast with additional shows in German or Polish or Russian or whatever languages Acta Thelemite speak nowadays. What do you think? Live long and blissful. 93. Well, I think it's a great idea. I would love for people to come out with podcasts in German or Polish or Russian or English or whatever. I would love for there to be more and more podcasts and more media and more ideas and more manifestation of Thelema in the podcast format. I do know that in Europe there is a group of people working to put one together. It's still in the planning stages, and I've been talking to them and very supportive of them and hope that they can get their podcast up and running really soon. I don't want to give any more information, but once they've got it up and running and distributed, I will be more than happy to talk about them on the podcast and point everybody in their direction. The other thing is, if anybody in any other country or wants to do a podcast about Thelema, magic, the occult, or whatever, feel free to contact me. I'll be more than happy to help you get going and let you know the things that I've learned over the last year. And if there's anything I can do, let me know. We're not in competition. It is actually the more people participating in this, the better it is for everybody. So I would love for there to be more Thelemic podcasts out there. All right. So let me move on to the next voicemail. This is the last one for this show.
Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law, John. This is Scott from California calling, wishing you a hearty congratulations on your year of podcasting. And I wanted to read a little poem from Collected Works of Aleister Crowley, Volume 1, for you. It's called Perdurabo. Exile from mankind, the snow's fresh flakes are warmer than men's hearts. My mind is wrought into dark shapes of solitary thought that loves and sympathies, but awakes no answering love or pity. What a pang hath this strange solitude to aggravate the self-abasement and the blows of fate. No snake of hell hath so severe a fang. I am not lower than all men, I feel, too keenly, yet my place is not above, though I have this unalterable love in every fiber. I am crucified apart on a long burning crag of steel, tortured, cast out, and yet I shall abide. Love is a law, love under will.
Thank you very, very, very much for the poem, Scott. And I too will endure to the end. So thanks for the well wishes and the poem recitation. The last email is from Nosti. Says, 93, congratulations on the one-year anniversary of the podcast. I have been a solo practitioner of Thelema for going on 6 years now, and am looking to become a member of an organization, most likely the OTO. And although many people do not appreciate yours and Keith 418's banter on the topics of the problems of the OTO, I do, as it educates us non-initiates to issues we may run into when we do seek initiation. I consider your podcast as invaluable in the insights that it provides to those regards, not to mention the amazing lectures and interviews on Thelemic culture, history, magic that you consistently provide us. Keep up the amazing work. 93. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Yeah, there are a lot of positive and negative comments about Keith 418 and I, and that's okay. People are definitely welcome to give their opinions, and we do listen to them, and real good criticism, constructive criticism, we take to heart. So, in fact, I'll be talking about that in a few moments. So, thanks to everybody again for the feedback, both the voicemail, all six of them, thanks, and all of the emails that were sent in. I really do appreciate the feedback. It lets me know how I'm doing, and it lets me know what you all like and dislike and so forth. So, keep it coming. Again, the easiest way to do it is to call the phone number of 206-600-4216, or you can send me an email, podcast@thelemacoasttocoast, or go to the Thelema Coast to Coast website and send feedback from there. For those who have microphones on their computer, feel free to record an audio feedback and email it to me too, so I can put all of these together and let people express themselves vocally. Okay. That is our feedback for today. Now, there has been some other feedback and some things that some people have been saying that I want to address. The first one is, one of the consistent messages I've gotten over the last year is that people have noticed that the show has been more about the philosophical or ideological aspects, or even the organizational aspects of Thelema, the OTO, AA, or just manifesting Thelema in the real world, but has been less and less about the actual practical ceremonial magic. And there has been some comments from people saying, why don't you create more shows about that? And I think that's a pretty legitimate criticism, and I want to respond to that. The first thing is, I think that is actually the area that most people concentrate on. If you go and look at what books are out there today about Thelema and magic and so forth, they almost all concentrate on the practical ceremonial magic aspects. Now, this is not a bad thing, but with all of that concentration out there about those subject areas, very few people are looking at the other things like the philosophical or the organizational and so forth. And so people are not really getting a full spectrum of that. And so one of the things that I wanted to do with the show was kind of address those other things, the cultural aspects, the academic aspects, the philosophical aspects that are not really being addressed in the market. That does not mean that the initiation and the ceremonial magic aspects are not important. They are. And some of the shows that we've had on the Goetia and Enochian and so forth have been some of the most popular. I am aware of this criticism. I think it is a valid one. And it is one that I will try to get a little more of the initiatory and the ceremonial magic aspects on it. To that end, I'm going to be talking to Keith 418 about the practical aspects of Liber E. I do hear you. One of the other problems that I have is that there are a lot of beginner practitioners out there, but there are very few people that I can find that can authoritatively talk about these subjects. There are, unfortunately, there's a lot of dabblers who, if you scratch the surface, they really don't know that much about these things. And so it's really kind of hard to find someone who's got some in-depth knowledge about these things. I mean, think about the Goetic lecture that we heard from Keith 418, or the discussion of Enochian from Lon Duquette. They have a lot of experience in these areas and really can get deep into them and really can answer questions about it. There's not a lot of people who, unfortunately, can do that. The other thing is, I don't want to be doing shows about like the Lesser Banishing Ritual, the Pentagram, or the Star Ruby, things like that. You can go and pick up any book on ceremonial magic and get that information. So I'm interested in more advanced topics and also exposing the deeper aspects of other rituals. Now, this does not mean that the Lesser Banishing Ritual, the Pentagram, or the Middle Pillar are not important rituals and that they don't have depth in themselves, but they are where everybody starts, and they are something that almost everybody can authoritatively talk about. You don't need to go to a podcast for it. You can go to any of your local body or anybody who practices magic. They don't even have to be Thelemites, and they can know about the Lesser Banishing Ritual of Pentagram. So those are not the things that I want to talk about. I want to talk about the more, the deeper aspects, the things that take a lot more time and a lot more practice. And I want to talk to people who can, you know, authoritatively talk about the tarot and the uses of tarot and astrology and talismanic magic and things like that. So if anybody knows of people who are very, very good at these things and who have a lot of background and can demonstrate that they have a lot of background, I would be very interested in talking to them. And feel free to email the podcast at podcast@thelemacoasttocoast, or go to the website and send some feedback there. To that end, I'd also like suggestions for other guests. As you heard earlier, somebody was talking about one of the AA, or getting somebody on from the AA. I've gotten an email in the past, somebody suggesting that I have Nima on the show, who did Mott Magic, and I have been talking with Nima, and hopefully soon we'll be getting her on the show. So I do get the suggestions, and I do listen to them, and if they seem to fit, I do act on them. So I'm really happy for any kind of suggestions to come in. Also, some of the shows that I've done, I've talked about some magical groups and also some events going on with local bodies and so forth. Any kind of those announcements, get those to me. I'm more than happy to talk about them. If they have, if like the talk that was happening in Japan, I'm more than happy to mention it so people are aware of it. And if it is something larger, like a festival like Babylon Rising, I'm more than happy to get a representative on to talk about the festival or the event so that people can be aware of it and plan to attend it. So announcements, guests, suggested topics, I'm really open to all of that. I've got a lot of great ideas, and like the other person was saying, getting off the shores of the coast, I've been talking to some people in Europe and some people in Australia. So I am looking to kind of widen the guest pool and things like that. Unfortunately, there are some logistical aspects to that, but that's something I can work through. So, you know, get the suggestions coming to me and use your imagination on if it has something to do with Thelema, if it's related to occultism, ceremonial magic. Send me the suggestions. I'm very interested in hearing them. Okay, well, now that I've gone on for what seems a quarter of an hour here, let's get into the discussion with Keith. And as I said, Keith and I are talking more about a practical aspect of magic, and in this case, Crowley's Liber E.
Keith, welcome back to the podcast, 93.
Thanks for having me, John.
I've been having a lot of requests from people who say that we're talking a lot about the various OTO and Thelemic group politics, philosophy, and less about more the practical magic material.
Yeah, that's probably a fair critique of the show.
So, to that end, I want to take a look at one of Crowley's AA documents, Liber E.
Uh-huh.
Because when people are talking about magic, they often think about things like Liber O, the lesser banishing ritual, the pentagram, or
uh-huh.
the hexagram rituals, and things like that.
I think it's important to look at the cycle of relationships between Libers E, Libers A, and Libers O. Because if you look at that carefully, you will see that all three of those books spell out EIO and are integrally related to each other in really significant ways. So Liber O is really the culmination of processes that go into Liber E and Liber A.
Mm-hmm.
So starting with Liber A makes a lot of sense to me, because that's where the initiation force for the last thing really comes, and then the cycle starts again. Does that make sense?
Right. As I said, though, let's start talking about Liber E first.
Sure.
That was the one that I kind of had in mind, and then maybe next time we can talk about Liber A. And as far as Liber O, that one is probably talked about the most. You can pick up any dozen books. The Magic of Aleister Crowley, Donald Michael Craig's Modern Magic.
And maybe your listeners could come up with some actual questions about that book if they want to discuss more.
Okay, that sounds good. So, anybody listening who's got specific questions about Liber O, do send them to us, and we'll answer them to the best of our ability. In Liber E, it's broken into sections that I thought are really interesting. What do you think Crowley is trying to do by breaking it up into things like the physical clairvoyance, asana, pranayama, and things like that?
Liber E is one of those amazing Crowley texts that's so basic and so almost primordial that in a certain sense it encapsulates the entirety of the system. You know, I'm sort of reminded of Heidegger's comments about the origin being there in the beginning and also at the end, that the origin foreshadows the very end as well as just the beginning, that it has an influence on the end of all things. And you can look at Liber E in the same way and see it as encapsulating a tremendous amount of the work. In fact, in a lot of ways, you could say Liber E is really the essential AA text, and that everything else is merely a comment on it.
What do you mean by it's the essential text? Because it tells you, you know, the processes of setting up discipline for yourself?
Yeah. That's all this work really is those sorts of disciplines applied over and over again through various ways. You can either look at that as being the most interesting way of approaching the material or something incredibly limiting, but I think we prefer to look at it as fascinating in both its simplicity and ultimate complexity. It's the seed from which the rest of the system really emerges on a practical basis.
Well, let's take a look at each section. So the first section is talking about the magical diary and recording
right.
everything.
There you go. If you don't record anything, you're never going to get very far. It's the most essential part. It's the book. There you go. How more essential could the first part be than that?
No, I understand. And in the show 23, I talked about the necessity of,
right.
of
there
having
you are.
A diary.
Right, there you are.
Section 2, the physical clairvoyance. Now, do you think this is an exercise to go through and actually enhance physical clairvoyance to pick it up, or is this more of just a discipline-building exercise to progress through this?
You know, my experience has been that any work at all that's concentrated and disciplined in that particular area has a payoff. Whether it's the payoff you think it's going to be when you start doing it, or whether it's another payoff entirely, is a completely different issue. And, you know, one of the things that I think your readers, or your listeners rather, should keep in mind is that a lot of times people approach books like Liber E and some of the other Crowley texts like this, and they think, oh, this is something that you just do once and run through, and then you move on to the next thing. That's not the case. The stuff in Liber E you keep doing over and over and over again as a magician. Remember, Crowley was writing in his book right up until the time he died. So these exercises are things that you do over and over and over again and keep coming back to. They're not just things you blow through once. You know, looking at the physical clairvoyance issue, I think people need to go through that, to work with it, and to see what sort of results they get and write them down. And the short-term work here always seemed to me to be about blowing through a lot of the barriers that keep one from developing astral projection and scrying ability. And, you know, we may have talked about this before, but as people age, they tend to develop a sort of, you know, armor or carapace around themselves that keep them from seeing things on the astral plane easily. And this exercise is really a way to get people to start breaking that down and to open themselves up to the possibilities and experiences that can come later.
The asana, I see like the asana and pranayama exercises kind of go hand in hand in many cases, working on the posture and then also working on the breath.
You know, my yoga teacher said that the yoga in the AA stuff is what separates the men from the boys. And if you want to be non-sexist, you can say the children from the adults. And the yoga material is very hard. It's just very hard to do, and very few people in the OTO ever get anywhere with it. They don't have the discipline for it. They can't do it. They don't get good advice, which actually is just pretty simple, and they fail. And their magic is pathetic and most of the time a miserable failure because they just never are able to work with the yoga. So there's no way around it. If you're really going to make a sincere effort to advance as a magician, you're going to have to do the yoga. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have to do it, I think, in the way he's talking about, which is very, you know, not easy, not a piece of cake, not as hard as some people think, but definitely not an easy thing to do.
Right. And again, this is to build discipline.
No, it's to... the discipline comes from getting up every day and doing it.
Right.
That's not what it's there for. It's there for to get you to be able to concentrate to the point where you can pay single-minded attention on things.
Yoga
is the goal there.
Right,
it's
and that's why I think it goes from asana to pranayama to the dharana. I mean,
right.
you have to be able to sit still, and then you have to control your breath.
Right.
Do those two, then you can do the mind control.
Right, exactly. There's no way that you can ever get to those higher levels without training your body to sit still and breathe the way you want it to.
And
all the speculation and all the intellectual rationalization that people want to do doesn't cut it.
No, you're absolutely correct.
And I think you need to get away from the idea of telling people it's to build discipline. That's not the point of it. The point of it is to develop those physical properties. Like going to the gym every day and doing weightlifting, for example, isn't about being a disciplined person who goes to the gym every day to do weightlifting. It's about getting big muscles. You know, if there was a way to get all of us to samadhi instantaneously the way people thought they could in the 60s with LSD, we would be telling people to go and do it. You know, the last thing that you want to do here is push some kind of Calvinist Protestant work for the sake of work attitude about it. That's really not what it's about. It's about developing those particular skills. And if there was an easy way to do it, that's what we'd be pushing. Crowley's way is actually faster and easier than most other ways. If there is a faster and easier way, then you know, we'd love to see somebody show it to us.
And then you get to the physical limitations again to know what your limits are, what you can and cannot do, so that you could operate realistically.
Right. Remember what's written at the top of the temple in ancient Greece. Know thyself. If you don't know these limitations, how can you say you really know yourself? This is the ultimate occult point of actually being a self-knowledgeable person, of having gnosis of the self. It's knowing how far you can walk without falling over. It's knowing, you know, how much you can bench press. It's knowing how long you can juggle. You know, it's knowing these different things. How much alcohol can you consume without having your motor, you know, reflexes impaired?
Mm-hmm.
How can people say they know themselves if they've never done any of this work and aren't continuing to keep doing it?
Now, the other thing is, these things are constantly changing, so people have to go back and continue to test themselves.
That's why Libra E is so essential. That's why you have to keep constantly coming back. It's not something you do once and then put aside. I kept a journal for a while, like it said in Libra E. You know, I did the clairvoyant exercise, people will say. That's not it. It's something you do over and over and over again, like Yagoram. You don't do that just once. You keep doing it. And Libra E is the book you keep doing in a variety of ways over and over again all the time.
Now, the next section is interesting. It's a course of reading. So, again, kind of balancing out the physical limitations, it's also, are you going to be able to read all of these things and actually absorb all the information that's in it?
Right. Again, though, this is the start. This is the way you can communicate with other people is by having a common language. You have to know the language. And a lot of times you have to keep coming back to those texts. In the course of long-term work, you're going to find yourself coming back to those texts over and over again. You know, a friend of mine is reading the AA reading list for the first time, and he's going through the Equinox. And, you know, how many times have we read those books and gone over the magic glasses? You know, people keep talking about that. Well, we got right back into it again and reread it and learned new things and saw new things. So Libra E, again, is something that you keep coming back to, you keep getting again. But if you don't have that basic intellectual knowledge in common, you can't communicate with the other people who have it. Again, this isn't sort of a test. It's a test in a way, but the idea is not to pass the test by reading all the reading list books. It's being able to have that language down, that common shared intellectual language, so that you can communicate with people and so they can communicate with you.
Right. We were just talking about the gunas the other day, and if somebody hadn't read the Bhagavad Gita, they wouldn't know what that is.
No. If they hadn't read that book, they would in no way have understood your point regarding those things, which was great, by the way, which was terrific. You could do a whole podcast on that. It was absolutely one of your best pieces. But right, it was essential. And I guarantee you, the people reading that post that were ignorant of the AA reading list never got the point of it at all. They never saw the higher point you were making there.
Well,
they can kid themselves that they did, but they didn't.
No, I understand, and we don't want to dwell on that since a lot of people haven't read it, but the whole point that I wanted to bring this up is that there's this romantic aspect of doing ceremonial magic where people dress up in the robes and they get their altar all decked out, mm-hmm. and they get, you know, they do these barbarous names and all of these Diosil and Widdershins and all of these sigils and all these things. But actually sitting down in a particular asana and being able to sit down for 30 minutes, that's real important magical work.
Right, but Crowley himself points out that both the ceremonial and magic and the yoga complement each other. What you're talking about is sort of the over-reliance on the dramatic ritual, the over-reliance on the showmanship or on the parading or on this ceremonial magic as a distraction. And that's a perfectly legitimate criticism, but the ceremonial magic only has import if you also do the yoga. And the yoga is enhanced by the work that you do as a ceremonial magician. The two of them are not at all necessarily need to be kept distinct from each other.
No, I agree. I see a lot of people neglecting.
He welds those two things together.
Do you have anything else you want to add?
Have you, you've run through the whole list, right? That's it.
Yeah,
the reading list stuff is at the end. You know, the thing that people really, really need to pay attention to here is that, and it's really worth repeating, is that this is stuff that you have to keep doing. I mean, we run into people all the time who, you know, picked this stuff up once, gave it sort of a pass. The people who make real progress over the long term are the people who keep coming back to this, who keep doing it, who keep working the system, and they see how LibreE unfolds into the rest of everything Crowley wrote in the whole rest of the AA system. The AA system itself really is LibreE extended out into other areas, but if you just come back to that, that's where it is.
And the reality is, I mean, I know right now I can't sit in the asanas for the lengths of periods of times that I could before because I have gotten slack about it and I haven't been keeping it up, so I can't do it, you know? And I actually, these are the kind of things that if you don't keep doing it, you actually fall behind. It's
right, and I think what happens is that people tend to substitute, you know, other sorts of ideas. You know, they see the people around them as being really dumb, people with less experience that they do. They lord over what little they have, you know, with the sort of the kingdom of the blind, the one-eyed man is king kind of deal. And that's really not sufficient. And it's never too late to go back to this stuff. It's never too late to make a real concentrated effort. But the younger you are, you know, people in their 20s are going to have a much easier time with a lot of this stuff than people in their 40s or 50s are. You only have one incarnation to work on this stuff now.
Start immediately.
Don't procrastinate. Work hard now because the payoff is really great. And the rest of the stuff without the LibreE applications is just not, you know, it's not going to cut it.
All right. Well, that sounds good. Perhaps we will continue this kind of conversation in the future about some of the other Libres.
Fantastic.
So thanks again for being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, John.
93.
I hope everybody enjoyed that discussion I had with Keith about LibreE. In the future, we plan to be talking about some of the other Libres and as I said, more of the practical aspects of magic. That doesn't mean we still won't be talking about the organizational, philosophical, and so forth. We'll be doing that too, and I'll be having other guests to talk about these things also. So I hope you enjoy that. The next interview is with Eddie Menzenmeyer. He is the owner of Latex Records, and I wanted to have him on the show because I thought it was a really interesting combination on how magic and ceremonial magic and interest have influenced music and culture in the musical realm, in particular how it contributed to Eddie and the creation of his record label, as well as how it has influenced the bands that he puts out on the labels. So here's a discussion with Eddie Menzenmeyer of Latex Records. Eddie Menzenmeyer of Latex Record, welcome to the podcast, Eddie.
Thank you, John. It's nice to be here.
You started Latex Records a number of years ago. What was the reason that you started the label, and how did you get into distributing music?
Well, it's actually kind of funny because that was really never my initial intent, although I've always, you know, growing up in the late 80s and, you know, having an interest in the 80s goth industrial scene, basically, you know, there were certain record labels that always drove that scene. And so not only being interested in the bands that were moving all of that forward, it was also pretty much driven by very specific record labels. So that was always an interest, but not really something that I ever thought I would actually be doing today. Initially, I started out just doing a website as a hobby called Rhythmus Network. And I was doing a lot of interviews and running internet radio and doing CD reviews and things like that. And eventually the record label came about by the production of the first CD, which became the first release on the label, called Electro Age 1, The Awakening, which initially it was just going to be a CDR, which was just going to be for promotion for a lot of the bands and labels that I was working with at the time that basically, I just felt that they deserved more exposure, and so I was just trying to help them out.
So how did a CDR of a bunch of bands turn into your first release?
Well, that's kind of funny. Like I said, it was really never planned. Basically, the CD project was pulled together and was working into just being, like I said, a CDR release for RhythmusNet, but then I also made friends with DJ Pulse at that time, who also runs MediaCast One now, which he's basically him and I were going to, we decided why not just start a record label. And of course, not really in it for the money. He was running his own internet radio show at the time, and of course, having MediaCast One, he was helping other internet DJs get started in that medium. At the time, there really weren't a lot of internet radio shows like there are now, and so a lot of it was just being run, at least mine was being run off like Live365 back when that was free, and so you had a few people who were doing that personally, but not to get too sidetracked, basically, we just started talking and had a lot of similar interest, and so we decided, you know, why the hell not? And so we just decided to go ahead and create an independent record label. And believe it or not, we were going to just do a CDR record label on the internet. It was just going to be very small time, not in it for the money at all. Whenever we started advertising it on the web, though, people were expecting a full-blown professional record label. So when that happened, I kind of went, wow, I really need to do something with this. And so I decided to go ahead and do it, get a business license and do it the right way. So that's what I did. Of course, DJ Pulse ended up getting caught up with MediaCast One. He started becoming more successful and so didn't have the time to spend on the record label. So I did it all on my own from day one.
Okay. Now, since this is a podcast about the occult, one of the things I notice is that occult symbolism, iconography, even your record label is runes. So how does occultism or magic, mysticism, how does that work into the label and the music?
That actually has a lot to do with the original Rhythmus Network website, and that's because, like I said, I was doing it as a hobby at the time. So during this time, I was basically just, it started out as a personal website, which later ended up having its own domain. It was another thing that kind of, you know, blew up and expanded as it got recognition. Initially, I was just doing it for myself, just to keep track of things. And in fact, the internet radio station was really just so I could listen to my own music at work. But eventually, I ran into Tommy T of DSBP, who turned me on to some really good new, some new EBM and industrial that I didn't even know existed. So, of course, that got incorporated into it. And then I started doing the reviews and everything else. How the more occult and mystic symbolism got into that was, since it was basically a hobby and I was just doing everything I was interested in at the time, I was also reading a lot of mystic philosophy and magic text and things like that, and so that kind of got built into it. I was doing book reviews and things like that started getting incorporated into it as well. And of course, at the time, a lot of my focus was on the on Norse magic, so of course that's how the runes got involved. And with RhythmusNet, the name of the website, with the focus on rhythm and music and all of that, also got incorporated, which the logo actually for RhythmusNet was the Vasuda, or the throat chakra, as well as the Rado rune from the Norse symbolism. So it all dealt with rhythm and the whole concept of everything from, basically it was everything from modern rave culture and its shamanic overtones, and all the way back to, of course, the original sound of creation, which, of course, is portrayed in Hinduism as Om, or in the biblical text as the Word.
Okay. I'm looking at a lot of these albums, and a lot of the groups also seem to have associations with esoteric subjects. Is that a particular subject area that you seek artists out who have an interest in kind of an overlap in magic or ritual?
Again, that was another irony of synchronicity with Electro Age. Basically, at the time, I was not seeking specifically any bands who had esoteric overtones. A lot of them found me, and a lot of them were bands that were pretty much starting to build their recognition in other music areas, such as like the industrial music scene, or, you know, working with EBM and stuff like that, and electronica. And as I got to work with them on the CD, I actually was able to kind of, you know, pick their brains a little bit and find out what drove them and find out what their music was all about a lot more than even they normally publicize. And by doing that, I guess it just kind of, the whole project ended up kind of attracting that, even though there really wasn't a specific aim in that with Electro Age. The actual concept of Electro Age had more to do with the creative process than anything mystical in origin. At the time, I was reading a lot of Jungian psychology and dealing with archetypes. And so basically it had to do with the creative process and how an individual has to go deep within themselves. And my belief is that when you go deep enough inside, obviously you touch onto something that is wholly other than yourself, and you get in touch with everything else. And of course, through mysticism and magic and, you know, yoga, whatever system someone might be using, that we find out that these things are reflected in all of these as well. And of course, at the time, for me, this was all very new. This was several years ago. So,
okay. Well, I'm looking at some of the other albums that you've done. We've given away Exoskeleton from the Evolutionaries. We've also given away Asmodeus X's Morning Star. We've given away Envy is Blind. We still have a number of CDs to give away, including the ones that you've brought some additional ones, so thank you for those. We'll be giving those away, too. Actually, let's talk about your newest album from a group called Kali Yuga.
Yeah, Kali Yuga just got their release out. It's called The Cosmology of Decay. In fact, I got a call from Riley from Kali Yuga earlier today saying that he just left Havoc, Club Havoc in Houston. And he was playing out there with Ex Voto. Of course, I'm only finding this out myself, so telling anyone who's going to hear this broadcast, it's definitely after the fact. But they're getting around a little bit, so that's a good thing. But Kali Yuga is, again, another change. I've pretty much tried to change the music style up a little bit with every band that I've brought into the label. And, of course, so, you know, everything from, you know, dark wave into more of a synth pop area, and then EBM, etc., even some ambient. And with Kali Yuga, I bring in a little more traditional goth rock. If anyone remembers The Damned from Europe, back when the Young Ones used to play on MTV, it was actually how I first heard of The Damned. Kali Yuga, at least to me anyway, kind of reminds me a little bit of Dave Vanian of The Damned. Of course, they've got their own sound. They're not a copycat band by any means, but they do have a little bit of that old gothic flavor, which I really love.
Well, let's play a song off this album. What song do you want to play?
Why don't we play the title track, Cosmology of Decay?
The sharks that follow slave ships through benighted seas, or the detritus of our vision, these scraps of misery. Gone now the azure lagoons, expended halcyon days, hauled off to the knacker's yard, defeated and dismayed. The cursed results, planted in wasteful and steel, when promise bore a mudslide. A mob believes the seasons have ended, and we awoke to pray for extension against the final.
Trains.
A time will come when you are bound to fall. Your legs buckle and fail, careening to the ground. The animation drains, grand designs, the best laid plans lay in tatters, shattered. Drains the vigor away. This is life, this is everything. Fall to the gutter and down the sluice, into the river that drains the land of all dreams. This is death, this is everything. This cosmology
Cosmology of Decay by Kali Yuga off of their new album by the same title, Cosmology of Decay. And hearing that again just kind of reminded me, it really reminds me a lot also of old Southern Death Cult, which most people know as The Cult.
Oh, The Cult. Got it.
Right.
Yes. I'm very familiar with them from the 80s.
Right.
So what do you think is the direction of the music that you're producing? You do everything from industrial to goth. I mean, is there any kind of music that you wouldn't be interested in, or
at the time, like, of course, like I don't really deal a lot with like metal and anything that's, I guess, would be considered top 40 or anything pop oriented, really. Although the actual direction of the label is to try not to end up being pigeonholed into a single sound, more or less. Like a lot of record labels are either known as either a gothic label or a EBM label or an industrial label or a noise label or whatever. And it's kind of this one sound and all the bands kind of fit into one genre. And so I've always tried to avoid that by pretty much displaying, I guess, a lot of my own musical taste and showing the expanse of that. Everything, you know, from ambient electronic to goth rock, you know, and anything in between and even beyond. I mean, there's areas I haven't even been able to reflect yet that I really love. So, and I hope to go into that in the future, and I'm sure I will.
All right. Well, as you know, we've been giving a Latex Records CD away on every show. And on the last show, I played KAJ's Under the Moon as the outgoing song. And that's the CD we're giving away today. And since you picked the winner out of all of the entrants, can you give the first name and the location of this winner?
The first name is Michael from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And so you have won, Michael, the Electro Age, the first CD that Latex Records put out. So congratulations. I'll be getting that in the mail to you shortly. And the CD for today's show that we're going to be going out with is a special edition. Can you tell us about this Mystified double EP?
Yeah, the double EP by Mystified, it actually is tracks from Tablature and also Transient. And these are two previous releases by Mystified. He actually has a lot of stuff. If you go to mystifiedmusic.com, you can find out more about the band. Thomas Park does some really interesting stuff. And he's a solo musician. His genre, I guess, if you want to try and label him as anything, is pretty much what's called ambient industrial. So it's kind of like a new sound. It's a combination of things. Everything from Brian Eno to some of the more modern, industrial, more edgy, dark sounds. So if you can even imagine that. But this particular double EP was actually produced only for demo purposes. So this is limited edition. This is something that no one's going to get anywhere. The track's off of Transient. Transient's actually the album that we put off on the label. And so there's a lot of variants as far as his sound and what he does with this. You'll hear some pieces that range from just ambient tonality. Like I said, like Brian Eno is a really good example of that, and Robert Rich, if anyone's familiar with him. So it's kind of like dark tonal sounds, but then also goes into a little bit of a beat heavy sound, which is, you know, kind of like kind of clubby, kind of drill machine oriented stuff. So it's pretty interesting. It's different.
Great. All right. The song that we're going to be playing off this at the end of the podcast is, how do you pronounce that? Endugu. Okay. Endugu. But before we go, what is your website again?
LatexRecords.com.
And where did the name Latex come from?
That's another one of those things that kind of happened by coincidence. Again, like I said at the time, DJ Pulse and I were going to put a record label together, and we were trying to come up with a name, and we couldn't really think of anything. We kept going back and forth at different ideas. I would name something, and for whatever reason, it wouldn't work for both of us, and he would name something, and it wouldn't work for both of us. So we're trying to find something that would work on both ends. And one day he just popped up with Latex. And at the time, the first thing that popped into my mind was I have a friend in Dallas, Texas, and his artwork is under M. Zabel, and he's an erotic photographer. And so that imagery kind of stuck in my mind, and I was thinking, yeah, that's marketable, you know? I mean, sex sells, right? So, of course, I associate a lot of the bondage and S&M scene and the whole master-slave-servant or master-slave relationship with Tantra. So for me, that kind of had a very subjectively esoteric imagery, but it was something that would have a very visual thing that I could use, you know, especially in, you know, the subculture that I'm marketing to. I figured that would be a fairly easy thing. Of course, I ended up pulling away from that imagery because it ended up being very offensive to a lot of the women in the neo-pagan scene, which I have lots of respect for, and it was never intended that way. So I kind of pulled back, and that's when I started focusing a lot more on esoteric symbolism. Of course, the bind rune has always been the Latex logo. But now, of course, when you go there, you'll see a lot more esoteric symbols instead. And of course, the black and white imagery dealing a lot with, like, the Tao. So.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you very much for being on the show. And I thank you very, very much for your generous donation of all the CDs that we're giving away on the show. And I'm sure my listeners appreciate it, too. So thanks for being on the podcast.
Well, I appreciate it. This has been really fun. And, of course, I thank you because you've been doing a lot to really help promote the label. And if it wasn't for Christian Stout of the Evolutionaries, I wouldn't have known that.
Absolutely.
You know, we had so much in common. So it's really great to be here. I appreciate it. And I appreciate everything you're doing. And I really love everything that you're doing with the Lima Coast to Coast overall. I think it's really great.
Well, thanks. All right. And thanks to you, Christian. I appreciate the introduction a lot. Eddie, 93. Well, that about does it for show 25. Thanks again for listening. And as we were saying before, talking to Eddie, that we still have a number of CDs to give away. The closing song is Endugo by Mystified, and that is the CD I'm giving away on the next podcast. So if you are interested in this, send in an email to podcast@thelemacoasttocoast, put CD giveaway in the subject, and put your address inside the email, and I will randomly choose one entry, and that person gets the CD. And this is open to anybody in the world. If I can mail you a CD, you can apply to win. Also, regarding the CD giveaway, on the next podcast, I will be giving a double CD away called Primal River Valley, number one. So make sure you send in your CD giveaway, because if you don't win Mystified, you could win the next one. So until the next podcast, keep the comments and suggestions coming, and I hope you keep listening. Love's the law, love under will.
Foolish mortal, in 10,000 years, none have summoned me without protection until today.
Yeah, well, it was a spur-of-the-moment thing.
You have no Star of Ashtaroth to shield you, no layman of Lemuria. Where is your sigil of severity to prevent me from devouring you in my ice-blue flames?
I'm not totally unprotected, you know.
Nobody mocks the mighty Masramel. See how my flames... Wait. You are unharmed. How can this be?
Oh, that. Well, I am guarded by the wisdom of the proud pagan podcasters.
Proud pagan podcasters? You have traveled to the sacred realm of paganpodcasting.com?
I have. The finest pagan wisdom can only be found at the home of the proud pagan podcasters, www.paganpodcasting.com.